This Do Lectures episode features co-founder of the Healthcare Maker Revolution, Pop-Up Labs, Anna Young, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2017.
Thank you so much for being here. This is absolutely incredible. So I'm going to spend clearly 20 minutes talking with you today on a maker revolution in health. And what, for those of you who aren't familiar with the term maker, I would venture to say that pretty much everybody in the room is a maker in some way. There is something, whether it is crafts, whether it is music, food. There's clearly a lot of tremendous food, wine, that is being made. And what I'm going to link the maker movement and making back to is, what is making in healthcare look like? And how is this, what is an underground stealth revolution that we see happening and that we're trying to poke and pod and make to happen a little bit faster? So this might be what, when you think about making medical devices and making those very surgical instrumentation and things that are going to be used inside of hospitals, this may be what comes to mind as the type of environment, the very well-trained engineer who has spent their career dedicated to learning the tools and the trade and the techniques to advance medicine. And I'm here to flip that on its head and to tell you that I started my career actually learning and understanding how environments like this picture right here are really where the magic happens. When the medical devices leave the lab and they go out into practice. And I was lucky enough to be able to begin my career in that field in an environment like this, which is a Nicaraguan Central American health clinic in the northern part of the country. And I started my career exploring a technology that you may or may not have heard of called an autoclave, which is the picture up here on the screen next to the clinic. Has anybody heard of an autoclave? Just as a show of hands. Okay, there's a few. So they're the workhorse of any given hospital. They are the reason that the instruments stay sterile and clean. It is a medical instrument or medical, the sheets and clothing inside of a hospital as well go through an autoclave. They're sterilized. It uses a process such as with very high temperatures, steam and pressure, to build up and drive out the bacteria that's inside the instruments. So hearing that, you can imagine it's a pretty important piece of the infrastructure of the hospitals. The unfortunate thing is for most rural clinics around the world, these don't exist. And so you'll have staff who are dunking instruments in alcohol, lighting them on fire to try to like burn off the bacteria and make sure that it's ready and safe for the next patient to use. And unfortunately, what we learned is that one in five surgeries that happens abroad in developing countries results in an infection. So when I was an undergraduate student at the University of Dayton, I was lucky enough to meet a group of engineers who were trying to tackle this. They were trying to tackle it in a really interesting way that was very inspiring and compelling to me. I was studying economics at the time, had never been in the School of Engineering, but I had a professor who knew that I loved to travel, and that was whatever I did in my career, I wanted international work to be a component of it. So she introduced me to these engineers who were building this project. They had no idea how to actually launch this from a university lab, and so I said, that's something I can help you kind of think through or figure out. We entered in a business plan competition, and we won. And we won for a model of how you can locally manufacture a solar-powered autoclave that could help reduce surgical infection rates in rural countries. We had a partner in Central America. So much to my parents' astonishment, I decided that my first job out of college was going to be running a nonprofit organization in Central America to build solar-powered autoclaves. It was not what they thought my college tuition was going to go to, but I have to kind of blame them in some sense. My mom is a pediatric nurse, and my dad is a computer engineer and entrepreneur, so I think I landed like somewhere in the middle of both of them. So it's our first office and our field team that we worked with. They had backgrounds ranging from renewable energy to construction. And if anybody is thinking about starting a company and wants to really minimize their costs, rural Nicaragua is a great place to do that. And it's also a really great place to be inspired by enterprising individuals everywhere around you. So I only spent about 2 days carrying the bucket of water on my head before I found the man who lived in the village also, who I could pay 10 cents, and he would carry the bucket of water for me, because that was his business, that he was running around the village doing that. And so this is a solar clave, a solar-powered autoclave that was designed with the engineering team from the University of Dayton and the team in rural Nicaragua. This was what day in and day out of our product development and field testing looked like. A pressure cooker with loads of wires coming out of it. Not sketchy at all. And it turns out we can't travel on the airplane with these anymore, for I don't know why. I can't imagine why. And we learned a lot. We learned a lot about how you can actually, what it means to make a device for this types of environment. And we also learned that it's not always, the technology doesn't always work the way that you think. So even in our minds, we were designing something that was really low cost. It was going to work great for these environments, be really robust. At the end of the day, our testing results were not amazing. And what we realized was that we had to actually put a little bit more time into the tech. So I transitioned from being full-time and running this company in Nicaragua to moving to Boston, worked a few different part-time jobs to try to make this work, and volunteered at a small engineering school, MIT, where they were looking at designing a global health course based on medical devices, designing medical devices in Nicaragua. This is not MIT, for those of you who have been there, but this is where I did most of my work while at MIT. So. And it was where I really learned with my colleague Jose Gomez Marquez this approach to medical device design that doesn't mean you land in a country with a technology that you believe is going to be appropriate, but instead what happens when we start actually in these clinics and learn and understand what people are already doing. So we turned the clinics into our labs, and we brought the nurses who were working inside of those clinics to work right alongside with us, actually thinking from the start about how do we design these technologies. We taught them how to use tools. They taught us how, inside and out of their processes and procedures that they were doing. They came up with a technology that looked way more beautiful than we had ever anticipated, and that our original design looked like. One of the most important things that we started to learn while doing this work inside of the clinics was that the frontline staff inside of these environments, they weren't waiting for the Americans to fly in and bring tech to save them. They were actually already making and coming up with solutions for every challenge that they came up with, because that was what they needed to do for their patients. So one of the first nurses who we met, this is inside of one of the urban hospitals in Esteli, was Daniela Urbina, and she, every day, her and her colleagues were hand-cutting these custom cloth glasses for the NICU patients that were undergoing phototherapy treatment. And the second nursing team that we met, also inside of the NICU, was working on different ways to actually adhere and connect CPAP masks, which are breathing and ventilation masks, for NICU patients, so that they could better receive their treatment, and they weren't, when their babies moved, they weren't actually going to wrestle or move around the mask themselves. So if you look very closely at this picture, and keep this in mind because it's going to come back in a little bit, there's rubber bands, there's safety pins, there's tape, there's things that you wouldn't consider a medical device, but these are the raw materials that we saw nursing and clinical frontline staff using to come up with their own solutions. And so we stepped back and thought about, really totally rethought the way that we were approaching medical device design for these environments. We thought, what if instead of us coming in and saying, here, we know how to solve all your problems, because clearly we don't, if it was taking us this long to try to solve just one alone, what if we instead taught people in these environments how they can use technology to prototype and invent even beyond what they're already doing, because they're already solving the problem. So if we can help them to think how they can use different tools, then maybe the types of solutions that they could come up with will leapfrog over what we could even do in product design. So we ran workshops, we built kits, we set up programs, we traveled the country, and started to see really amazing devices being created. There was a centrifuge from a toy Ferris wheel, an IV alarm made from a toy gun that a staff took apart and rigged the circuit so that every time the bag was empty, it would actually use a spring to close the circuit, and it would alert the nurses that they needed to come change the IV bag. And one of my favorite ones that this kept coming up over and over again was around respiratory challenges. So this is a nebulizer. It's used to treat asthmatic patients who are having breathing problems. It aerosolizes the medication to really, really fine particles that patients can breathe in. We saw these stacks and stacks and piles of these that were broken in Nicaragua. And we were like, that's just such a shame, because the compressor would break. They'd either run the wrong voltage through it or get clogged or dirty. So we're like, well, that's actually not the really interesting part of this medical device. That's just a compressor to push air through. What if we instead started to teach the staff just break down even what that medical device is and show them how they can use a bike pump, a simple bike pump? But they need to understand that this is not the fancy bike pump from MIT, that they can use any bike pump. And if the bike pump breaks, they can replace it. So we made a kit. And then they hacked our kit. And they were like, oh, that's really cool. But we also thought we could make our own masks from this. What if we use plastic bottles and actually cut them and put tubing over the sides of it? And then we started to see even more amazing things, where we thought nurses were going to be our target audience. But in reality, there was a patient in the background. He wasn't even a patient at the time. Sorry, he's a maintenance personnel at the hospital. And he was like, that's really cool what you guys are teaching. Can I listen in? And it turned out that 2 months later, when we went back, he was like, you know that nebulizer you taught the nursing staff? I made one for my daughter. She was diagnosed. And I couldn't bring her to the clinic each day. So I made what you taught me. We were like, blown. And so we started to have all these moments where we're like, this is it, this is amazing. It's like, I'm going to spend the rest of my career bringing these toolkits to developing countries around the world. But that's not actually how I spent the rest of my career thus far. In 2013, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which is a public health foundation in the US, saw what we were doing. They're like, that's amazing. Like, have you ever thought about doing that in the US? We're like, well, I don't know. But if you fund us, we'll figure it out. And they were like, that's great. Let's do an experiment, see what's happening in the US. So we was a total risk at the time. You know, we had this good model, we had this good thing figured out, but we set out to explore what does this look like in the US, and do we see that same frontline problem solving in the US? And the amazing, incredible thing that we saw was that this ingenuity of frontline clinical workers and healthcare did not come from the fact that they had no resources in Nicaragua. This is fundamentally in the DNA of healthcare workers around the world, as they want to solve problems for patients who are in front of them. Roxana Reina was figured out a really interesting way in Corpus Christi, Texas, to use bandages that were traditionally meant for pressure sores on adults, for abdominal wall defects on infants, cut their treatment time in half from 4 to 2 months and reduce the risk of infection. Tatiana and Dr. Alec in Brooklyn, New York. So if you see this picture right here of this mask, that may look remarkably similar to what you saw earlier in the hospital in Managua, Nicaragua, with the CPAP mask. Well, it turns out we started to see patterns in hospitals in incredibly different environments of how people were solving these problems in the same way, using very simple, basic materials. So we launched a program called Maker Nurse as a way to celebrate all of these different examples that we were seeing and to connect a community of people around the world to celebrate this ingenuity and incredible, simple, elegant problem solving. And because this was started as a research project, we wanted to understand, well, where did this come from and where did this start? And it turns out that the history of how nurses are inventing, being creative, is just as robust as the solutions that we were seeing that were otherwise happening very quietly. And 1905 through 1970s, there were entire publications. This one is 368 medical devices made by nurses. So everything from, like, if I were to just flip this open right here, let's see. We've got an improvised ice bag for the nose. So this is a hospital glove. The two middle fingers are cut off, filled with water, and tied up at the top, and so you've got a little bridge for ice. So not breakthrough medical devices, but really helpful if you're a patient recovering from nose surgery. And so what we were curious about is why, what happened? In the 70s, this went away, was replaced by reviews of equipment. And the nurses, we had to, be funded to travel the country to understand what is actually happening, when previously, these publications were delivered to every hospital in the world. And one of the challenges that frontline healthcare workers are in today is, medical devices are magical. and they're technology and they're magical. And we have an impression that for anything to be considered advanced, it needs to be complex and it needs to be black boxed. These happen to all be white, but medical devices are essentially, they're a black box of technology and of life-saving technology. I'll have you that. But we don't understand how they work. And clinicians don't understand really how they work. And so you end up with a lot of really clever like life hacks and solutions that are being made, but to actually dig into the fundamental, like how do we reinvent medical devices, we have an industry that sort of blocked that and closed it off and said, no, you're not an expert, you can't do that. But we also have people are very curious and they are starting to see when and how they're being hoodwinked by an industry and when there's actually really solid engineering behind it. So the EpiPen may be something that you've heard about in the news where this injects epinephrine for allergic reactions. It's the medication itself is about $3 to $4 a dose, and the pens are priced at $600 each. And then required in the US, every school needs to have them. And it came up over the past 2 years to be this huge, like, why is this priced the way that it is? Like, we understand that you need research and development dollars covered, but $600, that seems really excessive. And there were two industrious retired engineers in Silicon Valley who were like, no, this can't be the case. And so meticulously took apart the pen, and what you see right here is part of their teardown. And it cost just under $8, like literally for each of the grams of components themselves. And so in addition to fostering that creativity, we need more of this, because this is what actually starts to question and both build an understanding of the function of the inside of the device, which you can see from the components is like the complexity of a Nerf gun with a little bit more precision. But it's not, like, there is good engineering and there is, like, this is good engineering, but not $600 of engineering for a life-saving medication for patients. And so to bring this mindset of both questioning the design of current medical devices and uncovering what's underneath the black box and sharing what is right now these stealth innovations, our team, and seeing that the work is happening, you know, nurses are really leading this, but there is a broad umbrella of people around the world who are asking questions and solving these types of problems. We launched Maker Health, and we launched Maker Health as a network of hospital and clinical maker spaces, so prototyping spaces, be a resource on site for staff to start to jump in and dive and solve some of these problems and do some of these experiments in the moment, and also a platform to connect and share what they're making and creating. And this for us was a huge experiment. Like, we were essentially saying, okay, you know, we went to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, we said, we saw this is happening. They were like, all right, we love it, that's great. We'll put in part of the funding to make this happen. And so it was up to us to figure out, can we get the rest of the funding? We're able to do so with the University of Texas Medical Branch and launched what is the first hospital makerspace designed to teach staff how to use tools to prototype medical device ideas they had. And it turned out the first week we opened, we had hundreds of staff from across the hospital come in and start jumping in and diving into learning how to use the space. So Jason Schaefer was one of the first users of the space. He's a burn unit nurse from nurse manager, and he had an idea of building a system to redirect water flow in burn patients to save time and help irrigate patients' wounds faster. Jason used PVC pipe. We helped him learn, you know, cut that, size it, dimension it. He was super excited, took it up to the burn bath, plugged it in, turned on the shower, and next thing you know, the entire thing fell down. We're like, all right, don't panic. I promise this is, like, we'll get there. But what it showed him is it was like he went from idea to trying this experiment in less than 4 days. And so that sort of speed otherwise would never happen. They would just sit on these ideas. We taught Jason how to use 3D modeling, 3D printing. He was able to build different connectors and come up with a system that ran for 7 to 8 hours. And he's now continuing to iterate on this with his team to figure out what's the best design and form factor for setting up and tearing down. Laura, she's an ENT resident, wanted to make trachea simulation dolls, came in on her work breaks for over a 3-week period in order to learn how to hack apart baby dolls and to use a 3D printer to make the components inside, and ended up with both pediatric and adult models. Ben Nguyen is one of the technicians from the last vascular lab, has worked on more projects than I can count on two hands. And one of the first ones was wanting to build warming packs for the gels that were being used in the vascular lab. Here's a picture of him. And I love this because this is Charles DeBakey, who really, a cardiac surgeon who really revolutionized the way that cardiac surgery happens. And you can see both of them, like this notion of using sewing machines for prototyping. It was like not foreign to medicine. We might have forgotten that that was the case, but it's actually a very relevant tool. And so this is the first, and we're starting to see more. And we're starting to have, you know, every time that I speak in every hospital that we go to, we have this conversation of, what do you mean you're teaching people who aren't trained to be engineers how to make these devices? And what do you mean they're using them on patients? Like, that's crazy. What do you mean hospitals are paying you to do this? And these conversations need to happen, because at the end of the day, the solutions that are made are often much more appropriate, they're much more affordable, because they're designed by the end user and users who have really amazing ideas. So we have a growing community of people in all different backgrounds, engineering being one of them, but a number of clinicians, rehabilitation therapists, patients, and they're sharing what they're making. So we've started to collect these stories on a website, and they're both stories, but they're also recipes. And so we want to make sure that when people land on Maker Health and they start to dive into these, that they learn how to make them as well. We are trying to bring back this amazing community of sharing, not just around everyday solutions in life, but really around medical devices, because we think that these ideas that people have, just because it's in medicine, which is a highly regulated area, doesn't mean that they shouldn't be able to be made into a prototype that you can hold in your hand, that you can experiment with, and even use that to heal patients and maybe yourself as well. So I look forward to continuing to brainstorm and talk with you all throughout the weekend about this, and do have some materials as well. So if you're interested in what goes into a hospital makerspace and what are the prototyping kits that we use, we can check out some of those during the breaks. So thank you.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.